Listen to the voices of our world.
Difference is feared for difference sake. The rate at which we've pathologized young people, in my opinion, is at the greatest rate in human history. There is a real billion-dollar industry out there that profits off of seeing as not different but defective.
Today on Voices of Our World, you'll hear from writer, mentor, activist, and dyslexic Jonathan Mooney. And together, you and he will rediscover the dignity inherent in being an outsider, atypical, different, the person that just doesn't fit in. Welcome to Voices of Our World, the presentation of this station and Mary Knoll. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Stay right here for the author of The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal. Jonathan Mooney joins us today on Voices of Our World.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn?
In your head, right now, make a list of all the things that describe you. Now, while you're working on that, I hope you'll understand that there's an unspoken law in radio against the unspoken, dead air. And therefore, I will continue to talk. Now, the thing is, whatever list of attributes you came up with, I might think you sound like a heck of a lot of other people. I know. You're saying, absolutely not. I am completely unique. Okay, take it easy. You are both one of a kind and not so one of a kind, based on who's judging and on the application of that judgment. You and I both know that the odds are that your specific DNA is mathematically unique or darn near close to it. But as for that list you're compiling of labels that describe you, sorry, but a great many people are Caucasian, brown-haired, brown-eyed, 5'9", one of three children, Christian, bilingual, English, Spanish-speaking, single, and an information technology analyst. So to you, your parents and siblings, you're unique. While to a prospective employer, you fit into a specific category, and to an online dating service, you fit into a bunch of categories. Not so unique. Even identical twins can actually be individuals when it comes to their fingerprints. With identical twins, DNA will be virtually indistinguishable, but fingerprints are not entirely a genetic characteristic, but determined by the interaction of an individual's genes and the uterine environment. I'm an individual. You're an individual. We have that in common. Wait, common? That's how it happens across society. In marketing, medicine, architecture, and education, it's easier to address clients, patients, and students working with their commonalities. And that leaves those outside the common boundaries as exceptions, dysfunctional, and special, but not in a good way. That brings us to Jonathan Mooney. As a kid, John was a slow learner and had difficulty paying attention. A short bus candidate. He was, in fact, dyslexic and didn't master reading until age 12. But with his own and his mom's belief, he later earned an honoris degree from Brown University, won the prestigious Truman Scholarship, became a mentor, public speaker, and author of two books, including Learning Outside the Lines, published when John was 23. A bit haunted by his own childhood misery, Mooney drove his own short bus across the U.S., visiting other allegedly imperfect individuals, all of which are chronicled in The Short Bus, A Journey Beyond Normal. So here is just the man to get you to question the meaning and value of normal. Here's Kathy Golden with Jonathan Mooney.
I feel like I'm in the wrong place, to be frank with you, quite a lot.
But one of the most important things you've learned is that not only are you not alone, it's now more normal to be abnormal.
Well, that's really becoming more true in the sense of, you know, I think we're on the cusp of a cognitive revolution in this country when it comes to what we know about what is normal cognition, the value of aberrant thought in the generation of new ideas. I mean, there is a sort of body of academic knowledge out there right now that's validating that statement right there, that the whole concept of normalcy is a sham and it's a dead-end way to live, so...
What do we want to blend in with and why?
Yeah, it's such a microcosm of how difference is feared for difference sake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the logic of, oh, you know, it'll be detrimental in your life to be different. But it's just such, I mean, it's such a sham. Just a blatant simulation of a difference that is value neutral, and we make it negative in our sort of social context.
All this ADHD, all this alphabet soup of alleged problems these children have. And I'm just, is this all for prescribers? Is this for medication's sake? What's going on?
Well, first of all, the phenomena that you identify is, and it's everywhere in the country. You have kids who have, you know, five different labels, ADHD, OCD, LD, and it's an alphabet soup. And the rate at which we've pathologized young people, in my opinion, is at the greatest rate in human history. I mean, I think we really live in a culture of sickness now that sees every human difference as a disease, every single eccentricity as a pathology. So I think that the phenomenon that you see is really happening on a global and national scale. Now the Ritalin prescription rate in Europe is starting to reach comparable rates as in the U.S. And I'm sure that in Asian countries and in India, as they try to replicate a Western model of success, the same sort of pathology, medical-driven conception of difference will take hold. But I think it's important to understand that obviously it's a multifaceted phenomenon, but underneath that, there's a real industry. There is a real billion-dollar industry out there that profits off of seeing a young person, and adults for that matter, as not different but defective. That's a business. There's no way around that. I mean, that's not to say that I'm anti-medication. That's not true.
You're not pulling a Tom Cruise.
No, not certainly not. But we should be conscious of a real powerful force shaping the way we see children and people with differences. But it's not just the pharmaceutical industry. There's an industry of reading remediation programs out there. There's an industry of child behavior therapy plans. There's an industry of social workers. There's an industry of psychologists and family therapists. An industry that's entirely contingent upon somebody being conceptualized as deficient or broken and then having something to sell that person. When you come to realize that the norm is not a natural fact, the norm, the concept of normalcy is a statistical artifice. If we look at 25 different heights and we find the norm in those heights, most likely that norm doesn't exist anywhere in the population in reality. So it's really an abstract concept, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. People are kind of normal, a little off normal. They're not exactly that norm because it doesn't exist in the world. But when we realize that it's a man-made concept opposed to a natural fact in the world, then we realize that we can redeploy the norm to make things that we used to think of as deviant or aberrant normal. You know, it's kind of the journey I went on in the book. I visited 13 people with a variety of different labels and eccentricities. And at the end of this journey, what wasn't normal for me, you know? Like, it was normal for me to know a guy in Kittybunkport, Maine, who was saving up to, you know, have a gender conversion and was an artist. You know, it was normal for me to know a guy named Kent Roberts.
Cookie's quite normal.
Cookie's normal or not, he's Cookie, you know what I mean? And when we reuse the norm in that way, when we expand our relationships of who we're connected to, what's not normal? It's freeing. It's liberating. When we broaden the sphere of what we accept and who we connect with, when we get out of our little ghettos, you know, when we get out of our little niches, if I only hang out with people like myself, you know, what's not normal?
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jonathan Mooney. This is Voices of Our World.
And so, yes, we do get to a place again where we have norms, but we broaden those norms to be more inclusive. The thing for me is we tend to depoliticize our concepts about conformity or nonconformity. We tend to make it biological. Is it inherent in who we are? The bottom line is that people will seek out positions in which they acquire and monopolize power or resources. That's the danger. And that's a human trait that hasn't changed in these generational shifts, that people still acquire power for themselves. And I don't know what to do about that. Think about the amount of time, and I go back to school in this setting, think about the amount of time that a 17-year-old has spent in the institution of education. Waking hours, probably three-fourths of their life. Three-fourths of their life. I mean, that is in their waking conscious hours. That's an institution that is constantly about using external evaluations to judge, you know, who you are, your talents, your strengths, your vision for yourself. But that's not a core value of schooling. It's a value of education. Look, I've had gifted educators in my life, and I've spent 10 years of my life pretty much traveling America outside of my journey on the bus, working with teachers, working with communities. And there are teachers out there right now who are committed 100% to instilling education and the power of education in young people and not just socializing conformity. And the thing is, we need public policy that supports those teachers. But again, what's happening is a lot of people of my generation, they're not attracted to the career of education. Not because it's low paying. That's a misnomer. Not because it's low paying. The millennial generation is the first generation that's resigned itself to making less than their parents. They've resigned themselves to that. That's just an economic fact. They're interested more in quality of life. They're interested more in meaningful work, not money. That's what the millennial generation is concerned about. So education is a natural fit if it's empowering.
So is there a chance then that the spectrum of socialization under the next generation changes? Do we ever get there?
I think we do if we seize this moment that's opening up in front of us right now. And I really mean it's a critical moment. And it's the reason why I wish that this educational agenda around cognitive diversity was better placed in presidential politics. It is a window. We have a window right now. And anyone listening, anyone who's concerned about the quality of education for any young people should be conscious of this. We have a window right now. There's a graduate school of education near where I live, Claremont Graduate Center. Wonderful place. They have an education department, and their mission right now is to seize on the creative destruction that's happening right now in the institutions of education. The fact that high schools are irrelevant for the next generation is a fact right now. The question is, what do we build behind it? And it is a matter of saying, we're going to dedicate, I'm going to dedicate as an activist or as a professional, as a voter, I'm going to dedicate my vote to this being an issue. It is a question and a challenge in front of us all right now. Do we seize this opportunity to create something new? I believe that small acts matter. And Project Eye to Eye is my way to support that generation of young people who have been told that because they have differences, they have no place in school. It's a nonprofit organization that's based in New York City. I created it at Brown University, and then I co-founded it upon graduating from Brown as a national institution with a good friend of mine named David Flink. Its mission is to take students with learning differences who are at college or college age and match them with younger students who have similar diagnoses. We're not tutors. We're mentors, for lack of a better word. The purpose of that program is to give a young person an image of a positive future for themselves. We have 28 chapters in 18 states. We add about 6 new chapters a year. And the vision is multiple chapters in every single state. The research is pretty unequivocal. If you look at the journey, academic and personal, of a young person who was labeled learning disabled at a young age, the variable that makes or breaks their successful transition into adult life is, do they have a hopeful image of their future, period.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars, no handlebars, no handlebars.
So where do you fit in? Are you a normie or are you different? Tell us your story. On this or any topic, get radioactive and tell us what you think. Email us at radio@maryknoll.org or go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us. You can call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL, MARYKNOLL, or dial 877-627-9566. You're listening to Voices of Our World.
I can keep rhythm with no metronome, no metronome.